Hey, hey, Dana!
Hey, Ladera.
Okay. This is Climate Justice, Y'all, a podcast dedicated to lifting up and centering the climate and environmental justice movement in the South. Despite the South being the most biodiverse, diverse, and one of the largest economic engines in the world, we are underfunded and often barred from the decision-making table. Because of that, we decided to pull up a chair and amplify the voices and the stories of communities in the South that are hit the hardest by the climate crisis. We're going to use good old-fashioned storytelling to shine a spotlight on these Southern leaders from all walks of life who are putting their blood, their sweat, and their tears to transform this region. The usage of y'all in the title is on purpose. We're honoring our Southern heritage of creativity, resilience, and ingenuity. Climate justice, y'all. It's real, it's here, and it's about time. Welcome. Let's get started with the show. Like I said, this is Climate Justice, y'all, and I am your host, Abigail Franks, joined by the one and only fabulous Marisha Malcolm. Marisha.
Hey, y'all. How are you? I'm good. How are you?
I am great. And I'm so glad to be on the show with you. You know, you just provide such an energy that I can't wait for the listeners on the show to experience. But can you like introduce yourself and answer the question, who are we to host these conversations on climate justice?
Yes. So again, my name is Marisha Malcolm. I am currently a sophomore at the University of Alabama in Birmingham. I am a business major, and I'm very, very new to the environmental justice world. I did a little bit of work in North Birmingham surveying around, but other than that, I'm pretty brand new.
You know, that's it's great to have someone that's brand new on this show, because like, not only are you going to bring like a new perspective to this, you know, because sometimes we get in an echo chamber of opinions and stuff. So you're going to bring a new perspective, but you're also going to keep us on track and make sure that we're not leaving like normal day-to-day listeners behind. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much for being on the show. And I can't wait to work with you. Like I said before, my name is Abigail Franks. I am a recent graduate from the University of Alabama at Birmingham too. Go Blazers. And I graduated with a degree in political science and peace, justice, and ecology. I've been passionate about environmental justice my whole life. I grew up in a really small rural town in northern Alabama, like a population of 700 people or less. So technically, according to Wikipedia, because as reliable a source that is, it's about the size of a village. So yeah. And you know, when you grow up in a very polluted area that has a lack of infrastructure, you tend to find safety in the woods behind the trailer park or the river down the road. And it wasn't until I moved to Birmingham that I realized that environmental pollution and injustice wasn't just a symptom of living in northern Alabama. It's actually a systemic issue. So yeah, I want to keep fighting the good fight and eventually go into environmental policy. Yeah, so Marisha, can you tell us like the purpose of this podcast?
Okay. The purpose of this podcast is to spread the word from environmental and climate justice activists, experts, and the general public from communities in the South on environmental issues. We're using this platform to highlight the amazing and resilient work of environmental leaders across the underappreciated region. We deserve credit for our regional work in the South, and hopefully by having these conversations, we can get some.
Yeah. And this is the first of two seasons that we're launching. There's going to be about 10 episodes a season, and we're going to cover issues such as forests, water, energy, labor, land, the economy, and democracy. No easy task, but I think we can do it. This podcast is going to be like the perfect gumbo that only your grandma can make, full of flavor and a bunch of elements with a little bit of a kick. But let's introduce the leaders and brilliant people behind the origins of this podcast, Colette Pichon Battle, Reverend Michael Malcolm, and Alex Eastall. Thank you all so much.
Hey, hey, hey.
Hey, how are you?
I'm well. How are you all?
So, so good.
Listen, can I just pause for a moment and tell you I almost cried listening at my daughter just now? It just did my heart so good. And I just wanted to say that. And I want everybody to hear that. So make sure we don't cut that part out.
Love it. Well, Marisha, if you want, you can kind of interview your dad.
Hey, hey, Dada.
Hey, Ladera.
Okay, so I guess you can start off by introducing yourself. What is your organization? What do you do?
Yeah, so I'm Michael Malcolm. I am the founder and executive director of the People's Justice Council, as well as executive director of the Alabama Interfaith Power and Light, based here in Birmingham, Alabama. And we basically are fighting for a cleaner environment, a healthier life, and people's ability to thrive in life.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So what is the purpose of this show? Why does it matter?
Yeah, so we created this show to get voices of those who aren't normally heard, and particularly those voices in the South. As was said in the introduction, we are often the most overlooked and underfunded or under-resourced for the solutions that we bring to the table. And we bring these solutions to the table because we have to. We're the ones that suffer the most in our region as well. And so the solutions that we bring to the table are tried and true. We know that they work. However, we aren't able to scale because we aren't able to be seen. We wanted to create an avenue, create a vehicle for those that aren't seen to be seen and to be heard.
Yeah. Thank you, Marisha. And thank you, Rev. I really love that statement of like, you know, we're the ones that are dealing with this. So it's up to us to bring these issues to the table. It's like another environmental activist, Reverend Leo Woodbury, says, if you are not at the table, you are on the menu. And so I really appreciate that. And, you know, we really have to change the narrative about the South and talk about the unique realities we face. But we'll get on to that later throughout the season. Let's see, Miss Colette Pichon Battle, the legend herself. How are you?
Oh, bonjour, y'all. I'm doing good. And like Rev, this has been great just to hear y'all's voices. I'm already feeling better.
Oh, we love you so, so much. So could you, to all of our listeners, could you kind of explain like a quick synopsis? I know this is like decades and decades of research, all that stuff. But, you know, what is climate change? What is environmental justice? What's climate justice? They all seem related, but, you know, What's going on there? What's happening, especially through a Southern lens?
Yeah. Well, first, let me say just thank y'all again. My real deep respect to Reverend Malcolm and Alex Easdale and the U.S. Climate Action Network, folks who are making this happen. I think to hear Southern voices in the climate conversation is what we need to make real change. And the Southern front lines are the front lines. So this is just a pleasure to be a part of this. And my name is Colette Pichon Battle. I use she, her pronouns. I'm the executive director of the Gulf Coast Center for Law and Policy. We got our start after Hurricane Katrina down on the coast. And we are a public interest law firm and justice center. And our work is to make structural shifts. So shifts in laws and policies, regulations, and institutional culture to make those structural shifts toward climate justice and ecological equity. And we know this is what's going to save us. We hope to do it with everybody who wants to be a part of the solution. So we organize across 5 Gulf South states, Texas, Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, and Florida. And we start and primarily prioritize the front lines, Black folks, Indigenous folks on the front line of climate change. So it's just a real honor to do this work because I'm from this place. I'm from South Louisiana. And so are 15 generations before me. So, you know, we are of this land, and therefore it's ours to fight for. I think when I think about climate change and I think about the definitions, you know, there's two things to consider. One is we have to take the power to define things ourselves, right? So there's sort of the way things are defined in general, but then there's how we can also define them. And climate change right now for me really talks about the science of what's happening. There is a physiological shift in our atmospheric conditions. There are therefore consequences on our planet and on all of the inhabitants of the ecosystems across our planet. Climate change has to do with the amount of greenhouse gases that are being pushed up into the Earth's atmosphere and accelerating global warming. And that global warming isn't just something that happens in one moment. It happens over time. We see the impacts over time. And the driver of this greenhouse gases into the atmosphere is man-made change, literally rooted in the extraction of fossil fuels from our earth, in the extraction of coal, oil, gas, and all of the things that come after that product is extracted. That is what's accelerating the climate crisis. So there is a change in our Earth's atmosphere. It's being caused by man-made action, and we've got to do something about it because we're running out of time before we reach a point of no return. Now, that's just the science. If you want to talk about justice, you have to start from an understanding, which is that climate impacts are going to hit everybody. We saw Hurricane Katrina in 2005, the hurricanes that have come since then, they will hit everybody. No one will be left untouched. The question, though, is who can recover? Who can repair? Who can protect themselves? Who can rebuild? This is where we get to the justice aspects. And you can't just look at the anatomy of the storm to figure out justice. You've got to look at the anatomy of our laws, of our structures, and of our institutions to know who's going to have the ability to protect themselves, to prepare, and to rebuild or to restore themselves after a climate impact. This is not as simple as it sounds, because I'm not just talking about what is a barrier inside of the legal system. I'm talking to you about barriers inside of the education system, the health system, the housing system, the transportation system. All of these things together get us to the question of justice in this new climate reality. Now, to understand climate change and the climate reality, we have to go back a step. And that is that the voices, especially from the South, have been raising around environmental degradation for generations. We have major leaders in the environmental justice community coming out of the South. And this is not an accident. They're coming out of the South because polluting facilities, toxic refineries, these infrastructures that are polluting our air, our water, and our soil are 80 times more likely to be near Black people and 100 times more likely to be near poor people. And if you look at a map of the United States as to where the concentration of Black people are, you'll understand why the environmental justice advocates and leaders are coming from the South. Because this is where we see polluting industry really hurt and harm the people the most. And so environmental justice is about the toxins, the toxic chemicals that are going into our air, our soil, our water, and they're affecting us right now. And those same polluting facilities are also emitting greenhouse gases into the air that we're not feeling the impacts of for 10 and 20 years later. So the solution to climate change is actually environmental justice and climate justice. And so this is where we have to start connecting the dots here. And when you get to environmental justice, it's actually a term of art used by the United States Environmental Protection Agency. It is a specific term of art used to talk about those communities that have been left out, that are disproportionately next to these toxic facilities. And so not every community is an EJ community. But environmental justice is the linchpin and the solution to the climate justice fight.
Good Lord, Colette. I swear you talk and it just makes me want to march into battle every time. That's amazing. And I love the way you said that the solution to the climate crisis is environmental justice. I want that tattooed in my brain forever. Because, you know, sometimes this climate crisis fight, this climate change fight, it can be overwhelming and overlapping. Like you said, it's connected with everything. But when you put it like that, you know, if you get justice, we're going to be okay. Justice right. is the public form of love. I think I read that the other day, and it's really stuck with me. So thank you so much. You are amazing. But yeah, speaking of amazing, I would like to introduce Alex Easdale, who is also like one of the founding brains of this project, if that's the terminology I'm looking for. It's probably not, but whatever, it's okay. But yeah, he's a head honcho, or one of them. So Alex, what is the origins of this podcast? You know, like, we have all these issues we're fighting, but why are we using a podcast to do it? What are we doing with this?
Yeah, thank you, Abigail, and really good. Happy to be here. I'm happy to be here with my good friends, Colette and Michael Malcolm, Colette Bichon Battle. is a huge admirer and follower of their leadership and supportive of the amazing work that they're doing, and many others within our network. So let me introduce myself quickly. I'm originally from the country of Argentina. I'm a first generation immigrant to this country. Grew up in the South. I'm actually from a rural part, remote part in northern Argentina originally. So I've seen, you know, and I've been, lived and traveled throughout Latin America and different parts of the world and throughout this country. And I've seen and been exposed to the contrasting really realities that in many cases are very similar with regards to injustice and poverty. And I've always, even before I could conceptualize it, I always felt, you know, that this is part of my mission is to fight those injustices across the board. And this is why I'm here right now. I'm part of a, you know, we're leading a network of nearly 70 organizations throughout the Southeast, the Southeast Climate and Energy Network. And our vision is that we envision the Southeastern U.S. as a leading region for just, equitable, and inclusive solutions to the climate crisis. I want to underscore the word leading region. We're not, you know, we're not some backwards area. This is an extremely dynamic region. These are 12 states. If you add Texas, 13 states that, you know, represent 100 million people. Universities, the best college football teams, by the way. Ton of universities, over 50 military bases, extremely diverse population demographics, economic engine. I could go on and on. How important this region is and how important and critical it's been as a leading region for this country, specifically around social justice. You know, I could sit here all day and name leaders like Martin Luther King and many, many others who have come from this region. So I just wanted to say that first and foremost, Abigail, that we are part of something big here, and the podcast is basically an element of that. So the idea behind this podcast and which was initially supported by the U.S. Climate Action Network. So understand that SEN, or the Southeast Climate and Energy Network, was a project of USCAN for many years. They gave us some seed funding a few years ago. And the idea was that even though we're a formal network of organizations throughout the Southeast, we really need to increase our reach into the public, right? We need to increase our reach into, you know, different homes and so on that are not formally part of our network or not part of our conversations and our working groups and so on. So that was the idea. And then we saw the podcast as a fun opportunity as well to really enhance other programming that we're doing, you know, through our network and in support of our member organizations.
Thank you, Alex. I really, really like how you brought up all these important facts and facets of the South. You know, we're a really underappreciated region. I mean, we get crapped on all the time. We literally have people, like people from the North, these Yankees sending their crap here because it's cheaper for like landfills and stuff. But I could go on a tangent with that. But thank you so much for bringing that up. And honestly, we could have a whole separate episode about what the South is bringing to the table, Alex. So, and thank you. And thank you for, you know, thank you, Colette and Michael and Alex and others such as like, you know, Michael Hansen, Jennifer Crossland from GCCLP and GASP. Y'all are the founding mothers and fathers of this great idea. And through this podcast, I cannot wait to amplify these voices of the people who are doing the frontline fighting. So a final question for anyone that wants to answer this real quick, because it kind of just popped into my head. But, you know, we've heard over and over again from like, you know, y'all and from other people who are doing the awesome work that the South is diverse and has something to say. And we should focus on the fact that we want to change our narrative about the South. What do you personally want our listeners to know about the unique realities of our region?
What a great question. You know, this is a moment where if you're a Southerner, there might be a lot of shame in just what we've exported into the national dialogue, into the national broader civic engagement. The worst part of our Southern legacy and history has shown itself on our nation's capitals. And there's a lot of shame in that because while everybody has a right to believe what they want to believe, Southerners know better. Southerners know how to take the best of our traditions, even in tension and disagreement, and be cordial and be with one another. You know, the elements of being Southerners is what's going to get us through this climate crisis. How to be a good neighbor, how to listen. Sometimes you should sit under the tree and just think about it and listen to the things that are coming to you that are silent to other ears. But if you sit down and if you're still enough and if you got a nice cup of lemonade or a glass of whiskey, you can hear it. These are the things we have to export out to the nation. The best part of ourselves, the best part of the South, the part of us that says we know love deeper than anybody else knows love in this country. We come from families. We come from family units. We come from communities that are not just built through fire, but they are resilient through water and all of the other challenges that get thrown at us. We are from the place that builds tribe. We are from the place that builds family. If there's one thing we need on the planet right now, it's the ability to connect through all of our connectors and actually move as one human species to save ourselves from extinction. It's got to come from the South. The narrative has to be that the alligators live here. The things that were before the dinosaurs and survived after them are here in the mud, in the swamp, in the heat. This is where the solutions are. And that's got to be a part of our narrative.
Y'all, this first episode, we are bringing heat. We are bringing fire. We are starting this episode off right, y'all. This is going great. I love this conversation.
Yes, ma'am. All right, Alex, Rev, do y'all have anything to follow with that? I know it's hard, but.
Yeah, I was going to jump in, you know, before Colette for that reason, but, you know, decided to be courteous. I shouldn't have done that. I like the authenticity of the South. I like the fact that it's a unique place. I like the fact that it's real. It's real, you know, and I think some things people have more in common than they want to admit sometimes. And I've seen supposed racists get along with people of color in different contexts. Don't forget that I migrated here. We migrated here when I was in fourth grade, right? And I was one of those that never quite fit into one specific group. So I hung out with different people. So I was blessed in that regard because early on, I just dealt with people on an individual basis. And, you know, the other stuff for me has always been secondary, right? Even not that you don't champion what somebody's culture is and what have you, or their gender, or even their sexual preference. But I mean, just the realness of the South is just something that just, it's very attractive to me. I think we need, right now, in the context of what Colette was talking about earlier, you know, we are running out of time. I mean, we're really, really in this movement to save the planet, and not just us, but we have species, you know, by the thousands dying off every year because of, we're killing our planet for no reason. You know, we've been blessed with this planet, you know, that is unique in the universe, and we're screwing it up. So I think, you know, when you get a look at the bigger picture here and you realize, you know, where are we right now and what this region can represent as, again, a leading region in this fight, we have an amazing opportunity. So I'll just stop there before I start going off on a tangent.
No, Alex, you can always go on a tangent. Your tangents are good. Yeah, thank you. Thank you. And Rev, do you have any closing thoughts? If not, that's completely okay.
The South will rise again. But only if we get up.
Oh, yes. Wow. Yes.
So I would like to ask another question. And these are for you guys. What are some of the projects that you're doing so that people could, if they want, volunteer, get involved with some of the projects that you guys are doing? What are some of the projects that you're doing?
Well, we are building two of the largest platforms for policy and economic, environmental, climate policy in the South, period, through the Gulf South Green New Deal, as well as Southern Communities Green New Deal. We've got implementation projects that are coming out of that as well, such as We Rise, Weatherizing Every Resident in the Southeast. We've got projects that are working along the lines of biomass. There's a great deal of opportunity to get involved, whether it be through the Southeast Climate and Energy Network, which is SEN, or whether it be through the Gulf Coast Center for Law and Policy, and working with the Gulf South for a Green New Deal, or whether it be with People's Justice Council and working with the People's Justice Council. And if you're a community of faith, if you're a faith leader, listen, I challenge you to get in touch with me, and I challenge you to reach out to me. We've got work to do. As Colette has said, as Alex has built on, we don't have time to sit around and waste anymore. It's too strong now. It's too much now. It's too urgent now for us to sit back and just pray about it. We've got to do more than praying now. It's time for implementation. It's time for us to get involved. It's time for us to be active. To just pray at this point is you being lazy and excusing yourself. I challenge you to get involved. I challenge you to get in touch with me. I challenge you to reach out so that we can be involved in this process of healing, which is what we've been called to do.
That's the real and raw truth from Reverend Michael Malcolm.
That's the real. That was the real right there. The part where you say, if you still just praying, you being lazy. I mean, I just want to say amen to that. I mean, how much do we have to watch our community suffer before we engage? How long are we going to ask for other people to solve it for us? If we don't get in on this one, none of us survive. I really appreciate those words. And I just want to reiterate, you know, the Southern Communities Green New Deal policy platform through the Southeast Climate and Energy Network, the Gulf South for Green New Deal, which is really a regional formation pushing those local pieces of legislation and regulation. It's time for folks to jump into these places. And if none of these work, there is some local group, your church. It's time for you to start, you know, getting your church to change the way they consume, change the things they purchase with that holy money, change the way they use their energy, ask questions, show up to city council meetings to just make sure that if elected leaders are responding to the constituency. Or what about your school? You know, why don't we start demanding that our schools go to renewable energy, that our children be in sustainable and clean places? These are things you can do just because you're an active citizen. So there is a million, pieces of work you can join. And if that's not for you, that point that Reverend made, it's time to rise up. I mean, it's time to rise up.
Okay. So last but not least, how can people get in?
Wait, let's let Alex answer that question too.
Yeah, Marisa, thank you. So we're doing this for you, Marisa. We're doing this for you, Abigail. We're doing this for my kids. We're doing this for the future generations that haven't been born yet. I'm in my late 40s. I mean, you know, I've had a good run, you know, but, you know, what about my kids, my grandkids, hopefully, you know, you see what I'm saying? So we're doing this for the right reasons. Reverend Michael and Colette bring up, you know, the Gulf South for Green New Deal, Southern Communities for Green New Deal. These are, you know, initiatives that have been born out of networks, basically, that have been built upon each other, and they've been done on a shoestring of a budget. We're raising more money now, but, you know, it's been done with heart and with faith and with vision, you know, and belief. And I think, you know, how can you become involved? Learn about us. Okay. We've created with the Southern Communities for Green New Deal a policy document that was developed from a grassroots up perspective. What does that mean? That means that it's not a group like Colette, Michael, myself, and a few others sat around and said, okay, let's create this policy platform and then get it out there and sell it to the grassroots and then sell it to, you know. No, it was the opposite way, and it was a process that took the time that it needed to take. It took a year of multiple meetings in the middle of a pandemic. But we still did it. You know, we're not about excuses. We got it done. We leveraged whatever working group structures we had within our network. We leveraged networks in groups within our networks. You understand, who brought in people that I personally didn't know, for example, or Colette didn't know. And there's all these other people, right? And including small businesses, churches, many, many nonprofits, and just people in the community who built this document that we're not using this platform not only to lobby, I don't want to say lobby, advocate for just policies, just climate policies federally, but also at the state level and also at the municipal level. I mean, there's now a Birmingham for a Green New Deal. There's now a Durham for a Green New Deal, right? So they can take something from that document and use it, and it's not centralized. So they don't have to run it by me or by Colette. No, it's not like that. So just want you to understand that we're movement building, and that's a term that really needs to be understood here. This isn't a coalition. This isn't a bunch of people that all think the same way. No, there's healthy disagreement sometimes, which is great, right? But we are movement building, and that's what it's going to require for us to really win this fight.
Yeah, and in summary, I mean, this podcast is a way that you can get involved. You know, that's what this podcast is for. We're amplifying these voices that have been yelling for generations. we're not handing them the microphone, but we're making sure they get the microphone that they deserve. And listening and learning and talking to and having these difficult conversations of what the climate crisis means and stuff and how it affects us is so important.
How can our listeners reach out to you all, or what social media sites can they reach you at? How can we get in touch?
My email, alex@sen-us.org. All right. You can follow the Southeast Climate Energy Network or Sen at Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.
You can follow the Gulf Coast Center for Law and Policy on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can also find us at www.gcclp.org. And we're looking forward to folks being in touch.
And, you know, for the People's Justice Council, we also have Facebook, we have LinkedIn even, and Twitter and stuff. So if you just look up People's Justice Council, GCCLP, and SCEN for SEN, y'all are good to go. But do y'all have any closing remarks?
I don't have any closing remarks. I'm curious, Alex, you know, what's like one, well, Alex and Reverend Malcolm, I'm curious, what's like one sentence you tell yourself like a lot, like a quote or just a saying or a mantra, just to stay in this work?
I deserve a life without limitation. And I say it in the eye, because I say that to myself, because I've grown up with, like many, with limiting beliefs, and with this mindset of shortage instead of abundance. And I think that the universe is abundant. I think we're all abundant. I think we all have a big role to play, and we all have a gift. So I think we deserve that. And I think we deserve to give our gift. So I think it starts individually, but then try to take that to, you know, group and then masses, and then all of a sudden you're a leader, and then all of a sudden you're impacting other people. And then it just becomes a beautiful thing. That's a great question, Colette.
Word up. So I have something that I tell myself very regularly, and it's a phrase that came from movement. We were getting ready for the 10 years of Katrina commemoration. And the slogan that we came up with for 2015 was, "The seas are rising and so are we." And for me, as somebody who is in South Louisiana and whose community is going to be taken by the climate crisis, we will lose our land and our community and our existence to sea level rise. It's a hard first clause to say, you know, the seas are rising. There's something that we have to accept here, and it's hard. But what gives me hope is that while I have to accept the fact that the seas are rising and will take the land of my people, the people are rising too. And this work is growing, and people are starting to pay attention. And we've got generations, and we've got different races, and we've got different political views. And we're coming, and we're rising, and we're standing together. So the seas are rising, and so are we. That's my go-to.
In summary, the South has something to say, and we're going to say what we have to say, and you're going to listen, guys. So,
yes.
So thank you to the listeners and the guests, and make sure you tune into the next episode, because we will be talking about energy policy and how they connect.
Thank y'all so much.